Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 81, Island of Happiness. I'm your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me, returning from space, is the one and only co-host, Scott Michella.
I'm back from space. Space is really fun. It's full of crying babies, a lot of late nights. I had a child that was not in space.
You had a child in space. I had a child. That's amazing.
I didn't actually. The child didn't come out of me. It came out of my wife. But we have a son. He's wonderful. He's going to be a Nintendo nerd for sure. And he poops a lot and pees.
Well, that is spectacular to hear. You enjoy that pooping and peeing.
I'm enjoying it. A lot of diaper changes at 3 a.m. Yeah, it's a lot more work than even I expected, even though everyone said it's a lot of work. Having a kid's a lot of work. It certainly is. Although I have been playing video games, and it happens mostly at like 3 a.m. after a diaper change when it's like, well, I'm not going to go right back to sleep, so I guess I'll play some Poochie and Yoshi.
Well, I hope that Mario Luigi Michella is doing fine and will be enjoying listening to this podcast.
I did not give him a video game name. I was tempted to. I don't think I could have ever convinced my wife to. I could have snuck it in, but Mario and Luigi are too obvious.
So. Sephiroth Michella?
DuckTales. His first name is DuckTales.
Excellent. Anyway, Scott, it's good to have you back. Aside from dealing with Link Michella and playing your games at 3 a.m, did you get a chance to do anything else, such as check out the Switch Super Bowl ad that aired a couple days ago?
I watched the Super Bowl and I did not see that ad, and I don't know what the heck we were doing. I don't know how I missed that ad.
Weird.
But yeah.
Well, that's too bad. It was a pretty good ad. Yeah, it was only a 30-second spot, mm-hmm. but it did a really good job of showing off Breath of the Wild, did a really good job of showing off the key gimmick of the Switch, that being that it's, you know, portable and a console. Mm-hmm. And I think that did just, you know, fantastic as far as getting that game and that system, that franchise mm-hmm. out in front of everybody. And I think it's something that Nintendo really should be commended for doing. Yeah. It seems to be received well by people. So I say good on them. Glad to see it happen.
During what part of the game? Was it late in the game where they put the cheap ads, or did it air earlier on?
I hear it was late. I heard it was between the third and fourth quarters or something like that.
That sounds like Nintendo. Although it was a very exciting fourth quarter, so maybe it was a good time.
Well, I heard a joke that, you know, they aired the Switch ad, and that was when the game got switched up and suddenly everything went to heck. Yeah. The fortunes were reversed and all that. I wasn't watching the game myself, but I checked out the ad elsewhere, so... But yeah, it was pretty cool to know that it was out there and that lots of people were getting their eyeballs on the new Nintendo stuff.
Yeah, and I'm that ad definitely wasn't for the Nintendo nerd who already has a pre-order for the thing. It was more for people who don't know, you know, aren't following video games very mm-hmm. closely, but are playing video games, but they're not on the news websites every day seeing what the
right,
latest
exactly.
and greatest is. So.
Yep, but the people who didn't know, probably now they do.
Great.
Anyway, we've got a lot of other stuff to talk about. We've got some news. We've got this week's big topic, which is, should there be a successor to the Nintendo 3DS? And then we've got a few game impressions to share. So let's dig into that and start talking about a title that came out last week, that being Poochie and Yoshi's Woolly World for the Nintendo 3DS. Mm-hmm. Of course, this is a 3DS port of the game that came out on Wii U back in 2015. Scott, have you had a chance to play this one?
I have, and it's...
Nice.
I guess I kind of gave up on the Wii U because I didn't buy this for the Wii U. I was holding out for a 3DS version, and so I'm quite happy I did because I'm really enjoying it. So if this was just a rehash of the Wii U game, I wouldn't know, and I'm really enjoying it.
Well, it is pretty much just a port of that game. There mm-hmm. are new things. There are differences.
Yeah.
There are some good differences. There are some bad differences. Mm-hmm. At the heart, though, it's a really, really good... solid platformer, in my opinion. You know, I like what I've played of the Wii U version, which unfortunately hasn't been really that much. I've only played through the first couple of worlds. It's interesting in that it's a very methodical platformer. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to stop to be able to aim and throw your yarn so you can reveal secrets mm-hmm. or make platforms. And if you kind of just try to rush through, well, that's kind of impossible because you'll probably fall into a pit because you can make your platform appear.
Yeah.
And you'll definitely miss a bunch of secrets.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting from that perspective. You know, something like Mario, you can kind of just run and dash your way through.
Yeah, it's not something you're going to like speed run without stopping. You have to, mm-hmm. yeah, you have to literally build almost every platform in these windmills. And, you know, if, yeah, mm-hmm. if you speed ahead, there's no ground underneath you. You could possibly flutter yep. jump across the entire level if you're really good at timing the flutter jump, but
maybe or playing in the easy mode, the mellow mode. I think that one has pretty much infinite flutter mm-hmm. jump as far as I can tell. But yeah, it's a pretty nice game. And of course, it is actually in 3D on the 3DS version.
Yeah, and I think the 3D is spectacular. I think it looks great.
It does look really good. And all of the textiles look pretty darn mm-hmm. nice too. I mean, on the Wii U, it looks spectacular. And that's to be expected because it's an HD system. But I'm surprised how good it looks on the Nintendo 3DS. I mean, comparing the two side by side, you know, it's night and day. The Wii U version looks so much better.
Yeah.
But just looking at the 3DS version by itself, it actually looks pretty darn good. And the yarn and the cloth and all that stuff looks pretty darn authentic. And now it's in 3D. So that's pretty nice, especially given that so many 3DS games like Pokemon and their most recent Dragon Quest mm-hmm. haven't had any 3D at all. So that's pretty darn cool, I would say.
Yeah. And a new mode in this game is that that rush mode with the Poochie, is that right? I guess that's not available in the Wii U mode. You can't play as Poochie.
That is correct. I mean, I knew there was new stuff, mm-hmm. but I wasn't sure exactly what's in there because I haven't actually played the full version of Poochie and Yoshi's Woolly World. Mm-hmm. I played the demo that was out on the eShop, so I got to play a couple of levels, but I was actually curious about that. I wasn't sure what all the stuff is that's new, and that demo does not have the new Poochie level, so that's something that I have not been able to try yet. So how are those new Poochie levels?
They're fun, although I've only been able to play one or two. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how they unlock, but you visit this little doghouse, and if there's a level to play, you can play it. You're collecting gems as you're running across, and there's no stopping. The dog just runs, mm-hmm. and you're just basically just pressing the jump button. Very similar to
those vehicle stages?
Super Mario Run.
I thought you were going to say it's like the vehicle stages in Yoshi's Woolly World. There's a couple parts
it's like that
where you
too.
Like turn into a vehicle or something. You're just kind of mm-hmm. you know, driving up and down the hills and timing your jumps and stuff like that.
Yeah. So you're basically just jumping and also ducking.
Okay.
As a dog and collecting gems. And you need to hit all these different achievements to, you know, collect 1,500 gems, pop all the balloons, and I think there was a third achievement, but I had to run it a few times to actually get all the achievements, so it is challenging, it is fun, it's not just for babies.
Well, you have a baby now, so...
That's right, I have a
baby.
So
it's okay.
It looks like it's a game for babies. It is fun. It's definitely an easy game. I've died once, but mostly I'm restarting levels because I've missed mm-hmm. a thing.
Yeah, totally.
Like I'll miss one of the little yarn dudes that you have to mm-hmm. collect to unlock the colorful Yoshi.
Mm-hmm. They have the different skins.
There's also the flowers that you need to collect, 5 of them.
Yep, lots of stuff to collect.
Yeah, and there's stamps you collect, which once you get a certain amount, then it increases the creation abilities in the make your own Yoshi mode,
oh, okay.
which is really fun, which I played a lot with, and it's quite powerful. Like, I could make Yoshi look like pretty much anything if I had the time and the patience, which is really cool.
Yeah, nice.
You get a huge color palette. You know, it's very intuitive how you can draw patterns on Yoshi. So you can make him look like Mario. You can make him look like, I don't know, anything really. So it's fun.
Yeah, that's one of the new features in that version of the game. So that's cool to know about. Mm-hmm. Now, do you know what the Poochie Amiibo does? And did you get it with the Poochie Amiibo?
No, I didn't. I didn't, although now I'm kind of sad that I didn't because it's such a cute plush. Mm-hmm. And I have a child now, so I could put that in his room. Of course, I have no need for a plush Poochie yarn doll.
I do. But, boy, do I ever.
I just don't have room in my house or my life for Amiibos. But my son has tons of room in his room for toys like this. And he has a lot of my toys that I don't want to admit I own. right now sitting on his shelf. So,
well, he can't have my Poochie because I like my Poochie.
They're hard to get.
And I wasn't really sure about the character at first, but he's really grown on me since I got the Amiibo. And he is just cute and adorable. Yeah, I wish I could do more with him in a game I own. But I like having the Amiibo.
Yeah.
It's pretty nifty.
The design of this game is really cool. The way Poochie looks and acts is really cute. The way the sound effects are from Yoshi's Island is, I didn't realize that they had just wholesale reused a bunch of, you know, sound effects. And
well, yeah, it's modernizing the sounds of the original.
Yeah, modernizing the sounds of it, but they're the same sound. So they haven't really, I mean, there's a lot of history there in this game, which is really fun. The platforming feels solid and the aiming mechanism is just as I remembered it from Yoshi's Island. So I'm really having fun with this game. What I did want to note, one thing that I guess is a little disappointing is there's no overworld map. I know that's kind of a silly thing be griping
about.
Weird,
because there is in the Wii U version.
Oh, really? Yeah, it's just a bunch of, you know, level markers and you just progress through them one by one. Now, I haven't finished the first world. I'm on like the last level of the first world or whatever you call it. So I've seen some mini bosses, but I haven't played the main boss of the stage. And I don't know if it opens up to a bigger world after that, but what I'm seeing right now is just very linear progression through the levels.
Okay, good to know. Yeah, like I said, I've barely played this version of the game, but I did really like it on the Wii U. So I'm glad to hear you're having a good time with it. And while I probably don't really see a good reason for me to get this version as well, I mean, if you have a Nintendo system, you should totally get one version of this game or the other, because it is quite well done.
Yeah, and I guess you can get the Wii U version a lot cheaper now. Is it one of the Nintendo Selects titles, or maybe it's not quite yet?
Well, I know you can get for only $40 the game bundled with one of the colored plush Yoshi Amiibos, which is what it costs for just the 3DS game
alone. Wow, yeah.
So, yeah, you can get it as a discounted bundle that way.
But this is portable.
Yep, yes it is.
And it's in 3D. Yep. So if you go in for the 3D gimmick like I do, I think it's a must-have. I love this game. It's one of my favorite platforms. I like it better than the Kirby game. Kirby Planet Robobot.
Oh, Planet Robobot. Huh. I think you're referring to Kirby's Epic Yarn on Wii. But anyway, yeah, glad to hear you like it. Very cool. Speaking of Amiibo, though.
Amiibo!
The Poochie Amiibo is not the only one that I picked up recently. I also picked up the Amiibo for Box Boy.
Oh, I didn't know there was a Box Boy Amiibo. That's cool. Another third-party character getting some love.
Well, it's first-party published.
Oh, is it? Yeah, is it? Oh.
Yeah, it was created by HAL Laboratory. Box Boy was published by Nintendo, but they have not released this Amiibo in the United States yet. This is only in Japan, bundled with the third Box Boy game, or you can purchase the Amiibo separately, which is what I did. But, you know, Nintendo released their financial statement last week, and they talked about the upcoming games, and it didn't say anything about this new Box Boy coming out in the U.S. So I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead, and I'm going to pick up the import version of the Amiibo.
Yeah.
And it is really cute, and it is really boxy and boyish, but man,
it's just square, right?
It's
a square.
It's
like cube. It's a cube? Is he shaped like a cube?
He is shaped like a cube. It's the stupidest thing I've ever spent money on. He is so small, and he's just a cube with eyes and really tiny legs.
Simple.
It's the most simple thing.
Like, you could probably 3D print this Amiibo yourself and save yourself some time.
Yeah, I can't believe I paid like the same amount for this as I did for the Poochie Amiibo, plus shipping from Japan.
I feel like for the simplicity of that Amiibo, it should be cheaper. In the same way that I don't expect to pay $12 for a yarn knitted Yoshi. I wouldn't expect to pay $13 for a square.
Yeah.
But
I mean, it is very cute, but oh man, I feel like they really took me for a ride with that one. Me and my Amiibo addiction. But you know, if you're a Box Boy fan, it's good to know it's out there, and it's kind of cool to have that collectible. But yes, I think it is probably the dumbest Amiibo purchase I have made thus far. Moving along from there, let's talk about another game that came out recently, Fire Emblem Heroes, which is out on mobile devices, both Android and Apple.
Yeah, that's incredible that they were able to basically do a launch this game, which I did not expect. I just expected something to fall through.
Yeah, I mean, originally they said it was coming out on Android first, and then sort of on Twitter, like the next day, they were like, oh, it's coming out on Apple devices at the same time. And I wasn't sure if it was true or not, but boom, whatever, here it is. So yeah, that's pretty neat. And so far, I've really been enjoying the game. I mean, it's certainly not a full-blown Fire Emblem experience, but I'm having a really fun time with it. You know, it's sort of dumbed down compared to traditional Fire Emblem. The battles so far have been pretty simple, with only having 4 versus 4, and the story is really basic as well. But it feels really good for a mobile title, and it works really, really well as these bite-sized, tiny levels. I mean, there are so many levels in regular Fire Emblem where I'm spending like 30, 45 minutes to play through. And in this, you know, you go through a level in 5 minutes or less. So it works out really, really well. Plus, I think the art is great. The music is great for the most part. I'm really not quite sold on that wonky title screen music with the vocal theme going, Fire Emblem.
But the music is so bad.
I thought it was a joke.
It's like
first.
They paid somebody's uncle to sing a song. It's so bad.
But other than that,
that song is so bad. That song is really the only bad thing I can.
The rest of the music is really good.
It is. It is. It's great. I just don't. It's a bizarre choice. It's very Japanese. It is. It's very Japanese.
Of course, the other big thing about the game is that it is indeed truly free to play. And I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts on that topic. So go ahead. What do you think of the game? What do you think of the play? Or rather, what do you think of the pay mechanics, perhaps I should say?
It is exactly what I was hoping for Nintendo to do with these mobile games, which is make it free to play, make it so that if I want to give you money to do more than what, you know, the game's allowing me to do in whatever time frame I have, or if I want to collect all the characters, I want all 5-star characters.
Yikes.
I can give you $20 and keep rolling and rolling and rolling for characters.
You have
characters
to get a lot more than $20 for all those.
Yeah. So I was totally happy with the characters I pulled and in my first go around.
So who did you get?
So I rolled Takumi. That's my 5-star. Yeah, who I heard a lot of people are getting 5-star Takumi. And I understand a lot of the 5-star characters are just kick butt. So if you have just one of them, they'll carry you through a match. And I understand that if you have a 4-star, you can level them up to the point where they are a 5-star or act like a 5-star, and you won't have missed out on anything. The way you spend these orbs is weird. The more characters you get in the same pool, the less each additional character costs. So the first character costs 5 orbs, and the second character costs 4, and then 3, and then 2. And then at that point, you might as well just spend the last orb to get the 5th character.
Yeah, I mean, so, it still costs about 20 orbs to get 5 characters.
That's right. But the first one is really expensive.
Yeah, the first one is
so
more expensive.
So if you hate the first one, you can just get back out, but you've already spent 5 orbs.
Right.
I haven't run out of orbs yet, but I can understand how you could if you're just constantly wanting to keep pulling more different characters and seeing how many people you can add to your team.
But is there any reason to do that yet, other than just being like, I really like this character, I really want to get Lucina? Because I want Lucina, but I don't see any reason that I need to get Lucina or any other particular character.
Yeah, or you got Lucina, but you want a 5-star Lucina, so you're going to have to keep pulling and pulling. I don't know. I think for the people who are comfortable with what they get in the first go-round and aren't totally, you know, gung-ho for playing the medium and the advanced modes of each of these battles. Because I started playing the easy, and I'm like, wow, this is really easy. I've only lost, like, 1 character in the last 5 battles.
And there are no permadeaths this time. No permadeaths
at
all. They completely ignored that.
Which is very, very refreshing, because I think if there were, I'd be reticent to put a 5-star character into some of these battles, because if you lose that character, you're losing real money.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But I totally see how there are going to be people out there spending lots of money on this game just because, you know, to really play this, like, if you want to play this 2 hours a day, you're gonna have to spend some money. But for me, I'm only playing like, what, 30 minutes a day? I haven't spent any money. The game is constantly giving me orbs for whatever random, like, oh, it's you know, opening weekend, here's a couple orbs. Or,
but of course, the other thing you have to deal with is the stamina gauge. Every time you go into a mission, it depletes stamina. But so far, I've been kind of like you were. I've only been playing for, you know, maybe 90 minutes a day or something. And so far, my batteries have run out before my stamina does. So it's like, okay, I played as much as I can. Time to put this thing on the charger. And then by the time it's ready to go, it's like, oh, all my stamina is back. I can play some more if I want to.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's not really anything that so far has been forcing me to pay to keep playing. It seems like it's mm-hmm. just, oh, do you want to get more characters? Then go ahead. Mm-hmm. Here, you can spend lots and lots of money that way. Anyway, who else did you get besides Takumi? I want to know.
I got Takumi. I got Shauna, who's a level, I think she was a 4-star. Okay. And then I got Felicia. Yeah. So I got Felicia, I got Shauna, I got Takumi, and I got, is it Kagero?
Must be.
I don't know who the last one or the other two I got, but I don't know who you start with, so I'm a dummy. I did end up going with a lot of the characters I pulled in my, a gacha? Because it's based on the gachapon system of gaming.
I've heard it called that a lot, yeah. Because of the random nature of it. Just like, you know, one of those gachapon or capsule machines is that, you know, the outcome is random.
So that, I think that's exciting, and people like to gamble, I'm sure, and they're gambling real money to get different characters.
Speaking of which, my roster is somewhat of a mixed bag so far. I end up getting Stahl from Fire Emblem Awakening, Nino, who I have no idea who that character is, it's not one I'm familiar with, Arthur, who I believe is from Fates, and I don't really care about him either, and then my 5-star was Tiki, who, you know, she's kind of okay, turns into a dragon, has been very useful in battle so far. But then I also happened to get Setsuna, who is an archer from Fire Emblem Fates and just so happens to be my favorite character from the game. You might remember mm-hmm. that I picked her as actually my favorite character from all of last year. So I totally lucked out and I was very happy that that's the one I ended up with because I like her a lot. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Worked out for me pretty well.
You don't have to spend any money.
Not yet.
Do you see yourself spending money to play this game?
Not really. Mm-hmm. You know, if I really want to play as these characters, well, I have the real Fire Emblem games. I can just go play Fire Emblem Fates that I already paid $80 yeah. for, or Fire Emblem Awakening that I already paid $40 for. And so I can just go experience these this way. And it would be great to have all these characters in Heroes, but I don't think I'm going to, you know, blow loads of cash or perhaps any cash on this at all. Especially for where you don't really know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
You know, that's the downside to the gacha mechanic is I could spend a bunch and still not get what I'm looking for. So mm-hmm. you know, I got my fingers crossed that the next time I try it out, I'm going to get a Lucina, but who knows?
You know, the only bad thing I can say about the economy of this game is it is pay to win in a way.
Because so far I've been winning with no problem.
If I paid $50 into this game, I could just keep trying to get a bunch of 5-star characters. Once I have all 5-star characters, I could take on some of the hardest levels in the game and have no problem beating them because, you know, without very little or any strategy. Now, I don't know if that's any fun. I don't think it is. I think it's fun to lose once in a while. And the nice thing is I don't spend 40 minutes playing a level, mm-hmm. lose, and then have to restart a 40-minute level.
Yeah,
that
totally.
That's my complaint with every Fire Emblem game that has come before this.
Well, you can save some of those in mid-battle, you know.
Oh, well, I guess I did know that, but, you know, I don't plan ahead like that. I just headlong, you know, rush straight into battle. But there's some definite, you know, intricacies in playing this game that aren't readily apparent. So, you know, the way, you know, if you have characters right next to each other, one can support the other. And then if you have a character, a winged character, they can move over terrain that other characters can't. Mm-hmm. And there's I think red beats blue beats green.
Yes, the old weapon triangle. That's something that mm-hmm. hasn't really been as prominent, I don't think, in the most recent real Fire Emblem games. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't really feel that coming into play very much in Fire mm-hmm. Emblem Fate. So it's kind of cool to see that return and be so important and significant in Fire Emblem Heroes. So I'm really happy about that, actually.
Yeah, it makes you really think about, okay, which character am I going to move to the front of my ranks because who's going to need to take on the strongest character on the opposing team mm-hmm. who may be a green character. So, yeah, I think that adds
a lot.
And
that's where having new characters really comes into play because if you see that your opponents have a bunch of red characters, then it's like, well, I'm going to want to have a bunch of characters of the right color to oppose that. Other than that, mm-hmm. though, it really doesn't seem that it's that important to get these additional characters. And that's fine with me. I'm happy to pay for a well-made game, but I'm not going to complain if they decide to give it to me for free.
Well, I highly recommend it. It's free, for gosh sakes.
Yeah, and certainly worth the
money. If you don't want to spend the money, you don't have to. I would expect at least half the people playing this game aren't spending any money. But then the other half who really, really are getting into it, you know, I'm sure they're spending a lot of money because this game has moved up the charts in the most profitable category on the App Store. So people are spending money on this game. It's like right there, up there with Clash of Clans in its category. I think not in overall, it's not one of the most profitable apps. But yeah, it's doing quite well. And I think it can only get better. The reviews are outstanding on this. If you compare this to the reviews on the Mario Run game, it's just night and day, and it really makes a difference.
Well, that's because people felt entitled to a free game, not because it was actually bad. It's hardly a fair comparison.
But now, to the flip side, this game is making more money than Mario Run ever has. So
is that true? I mean, I don't have any proof that you're wrong, but Super Mario Run's already made $53 million. And if Fire Emblem Heroes has already made that in less than a week, well, let's just say that that'd be pretty amazing. And I guess Nintendo does know how to do mobile.
So in the top grossing apps in the entire App Store, including things like Netflix and Pandora and Clash Royale and Game of War, Fire Emblem Heroes is number 10, which is incredible. Incredible. So, you know, it's so top grossing, meaning it's making more money than 99.9% of the apps on the App Store right now. That is outstanding. And it's going to continue to do well because it's, you know, the ratings are great. People are just finding out about this game. It's going to move up the ranks. I bet it moves up higher and higher over the next few weeks.
Any further thoughts on this one before we move on?
No. I mean, if you have an Android or iOS device, this is a must download. I'm telling you right now, it's a great game. I go to it now when I have a few minutes of downtime and or when I'm, you know, awake at 3 a.m. changing diapers. So yeah, it's fun little diversion. I don't play Fire Emblem games. I find them very time consuming and the strategy is just hard to wrap your head around. This is very much like Fire Emblem with training wheels, but I think there's a lot more deep gameplay if you play longer and play the more advanced levels. But I like that it's 4-on-4. I don't have to think too hard. Ultimately, if I lose a battle, I'm not permadeathing any of my characters, mm-hmm. and I can just start the level again, and all I lose out is like an orb, and I have a lot of orbs to spare. So yeah, I hope you folks out there are enjoying this as much as I am.
All right, cool. Let's move on to our next title I want to discuss. This one is a 3DS eShop title called LifeSpeed. Scott, I'm going to go ahead and guess you've never even heard of this game. Am I right?
I haven't. LifeSpeed. You know, I'm on Twitter for a lot of the day, too, and I believe I've seen some chatter about LifeSpeed, but I don't know anything about it.
Well, I don't blame you, because I didn't know anything about it until a week ago myself. It is a story-heavy racing game, specifically a futuristic combat racing game, sort of combined with a story that's sort of like Hunger Games, where it's like, oh, you know, all the planets are competing to see who gets the resources, and it's all settled by some sort of crazy racing competition. The races are just full speed ahead. You accelerate automatically. You have to worry about steering and shooting. But you know, other than that, the acceleration is all automatic.
Okay.
Of course, being a racing game, practice makes perfect. You just sort of have to, you know, learn the tracks and figure out you know, how to maneuver through them. It starts out pretty frustrating because of that, but as you know, get into the zone and you figure out you know, when you have to brake and when you have to barrel roll, you know, then you'll start figuring it out. You're like, oh yeah, this is starting to get kind of fun, because the courses are pretty complex and the level geometry is pretty complex. The downside to that is that sometimes you can get like caught up on these, you know, bumps or obstacles that I don't think are really meant to trip you up, but you know, they're like there, mm-hmm. they kind of just blend in with the scenery, and suddenly it's like, well, now I'm stuck here or I've crashed or something like that. But again, that's why you just gotta, you know, play it and learn the tracks and figure out what you're doing. It's a good looking game. You know, sometimes there is that lack of visual contrast that can make things a little tricky while you're still learning the tracks. And then, like, when you get some weapons, the targeting reticle pops up, and then it's like, well, this is, you know, messing up with my vision as well. Mm-hmm. But again, the more you play it, the more you learn, the more you don't have to worry about that stuff. You can just concentrate on, you know, flying through these levels. and enjoying the racing.
Is it in 3D?
It is. It is definitely in 3D. Oh, cool. And at first, while I was still struggling with things, I actually had to turn the 3D off because, you know, I found myself, you know, sort of focusing on the wrong things. But again, as I play it more, it's like, okay, well, I can relax. I can enjoy it more. I can turn on the 3D. So, yeah, there's a lot of things to like about this game. There are a few things to not like about this game as well. For one thing, there is no manual. I mean, there is no in-game digital manual. So the only way to learn what you're doing is to play the game's story mode, which, you know, then it, you know, gives these really brief tutorials and shows you what's going on. But yeah, strangely enough, there's no digital manual. Very odd choice.
That is an odd choice. But yeah, I'm looking at this right now, and it looks a lot like the F-Zero game we didn't get for the 3DS.
Well, of course, F-Zero, you know, you're pretty much always on the ground in these hover vehicles. This is, you know, you have full 3D motion, so you're moving up and down. You are flying, you know, as well as moving side to side. So, you know, it's not really F-Zero, but it's kind of like F-Zero. I mean, if you're trying to fill that F-Zero void, then yes. I suppose, you know, it's probably, you know, maybe more akin to Wipeout, since this does have the combat aspect as well, which F-Zero, you know, traditionally doesn't have.
How big is memorization in this? Like, the third time around the track, do you feel like you've got it?
I don't know. I mean, it can be pretty tricky and frustrating the first couple times you attempt a course. It does take some practice. So, you know, it's a bit of an acquired taste because of that. But, you know, if you've played a track, you know, maybe two or three times, you'll be figuring it out.
I'm excited that it's an independent developer and, you know, it looks like a game that could have been on a cart and, you know, not just download only.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really surprising that you get so much game for only $6. Although I will say they could have used a bit more effort to go into the story. Considering how story heavy this thing is, oh man, that story is just kind of over the top, ridiculous. It just comes at you fast in this comic book style, and I'm not even sure what's going on. They're talking about these characters and this lore, and it's like, you know what? I don't care. Just let me get out there and race and shoot somebody. So solid, you know, not amazing, not great. But, you know, it does fill a niche, and it's a pretty decent title.
Cool.
That does it for this week's Game Impressions. So let's move on to just a little bit of news. There's not a whole lot of news to discuss this week, but I did want to bring up that Puyo Puyo Tetris for Switch now has an official release date. It's coming out in North America on April 25th, so that's cool to know. Mm-hmm. Are you looking forward to that one by any chance?
I'm on the fence. I didn't buy a Switch to play Tetris. And I've played Tetris, on every console I own.
Well, it's not just Tetris. It's Puyo Puyo mixed with Tetris.
I know, but is it $40 Tetris or is it $20 Tetris? Or is it $60 Tetris?
It's not $60. I think it's closer to $40.
It's going to be a hard decision for me because, I don't know, I might be over Tetris. I hate to say it.
Well, I've heard good things. I'm curious about it, you know. I'd like to give it a try and see if it's any good. It's not on my must-have list either, so I understand where you're coming from. The other upcoming release I'm excited about is that we found out there is a new Zelda book. Yes, another one. This one called The Legend of Zelda Hyrule Encyclopedia, and it's coming out just next month in Japan, coming out in March.
Oh, wow. Is it a Nintendo-published book?
Well, Nintendo doesn't publish it themselves, but it is officially licensed by Nintendo. And it's basically, you know, the third in the series. You know, we had Hyrule Historia, and then we're having Art and Artifacts. Mm-hmm. And they haven't officially confirmed this one for the U.S., but earlier, when they did announce Art and Artifacts for the U.S., they promised there were going to be three Zelda books coming out to help celebrate the series' 30th anniversary, which, of course, was last year in Japan, but it's actually this year in the U.S. So I would only assume that this is the second book that's going to be coming out as part of this anniversary celebration. I would assume that Dark Horse will be publishing it here, and hopefully will be coming out in the not-too-distant future. Of course, that U.S. version of Art and Artifacts comes out in just a couple of weeks here in North America, so that's another Zelda book to be looking forward to. A lot of times I do import these kinds of things from Japan, but this time, since it's called an encyclopedia, I'm kind of thinking, no, that's probably going to have a little too much Japanese text for me. I haven't seen any interior pages yet, so I'm just going to assume it's going to be filled with great stuff. But yeah, I think I'm going to kind of hold out and wait for the North American release that I expect to be made official before too terribly long. So
yeah, you'll want to be able to read it.
Yeah, definitely. But I anticipate it's going to be filled with all kinds of exciting Zelda knowledge.
Listed in alphabetical order.
Presumably so.
Speaking of books, I wanted to mention a book that I kickstarted that hasn't arrived yet, but all the backers got a PDF download of the book, and it's outstanding. So I just want to give it a shout out. It's the NES Famicom Visual Compendium. It's by a British guy named Sam Dyer. He's made a bunch of these art books for other consoles, and this one for the NES Famicom is really outstanding. The writing's top-notch. The games that they've chosen to include run from all the obvious games to a lot of obscure games that people should give another look to. The design of the book is just great. It's a beautiful book. The PDF I was blown away by, and I just quickly swiped through it as I found myself reading every single page and poring over the pictures. I realized I was going to ruin this book for myself if I just read it on my iPad. So I had to quickly close down iBooks and forget about the PDF, and I can't wait to get the hard copy in my hands. So it's called the NES Famicom Visual Compendium. If you didn't get it on Kickstarter, you can still buy it. I think it's $50, and it's like 300 pages, for gosh sake. So I think it's worth it.
All right, cool. Good to know about. I guess this is where we should probably take a little intermission, and then we come back, we'll have some listener emails, and then we will move on to our big topic, which is should or should there not be a successor to the Nintendo 3DS? All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss some listener email. We will be getting to our big topic after that, but first of all, we've got a couple of letters I've been holding on to because, Scott, they were aimed at you, so we weren't able to really cover these over the last couple of weeks.
I hope it's not hate mail.
Well, we'll see about that.
Okay.
So here comes the first one. It is from a listener, Johnny P., and he writes, R.I.P. Scott, I am so sorry. Obviously, Scott knows by now how wrong he was on the Vita resolution and the Switch comparison. He needs to come back and clear things up. I'm rooting for him, but wow, he was really down on the resolution when those that have played it report it looks really good. Maybe judgments should be reserved until it is in our hands. Thanks again, and I look forward to Scott's return.
I was wrong. The screen is not as... So I believe it's slightly better resolution than the Vita. I need to look up the Vita resolution. But to be fair, it is better than the PS Vita's resolution, or at least equal to it. And the Switch has a 720p screen. And the screen is not as big as I expected in my head. So that means the pixels are smaller as well. So that means the dot pitch or the amount of pixels per inch is actually relatively high. Not compared to an iPhone or an iPad high, or even a current gen Android device. But much, much better than the Wii U, where I feel like it's almost like a screen door effect you're seeing on the Wii U gamepad because the pixels are so large. And you get the same effect with a 3DS XL, where the resolution is very low, you blow the screen up, and now you're actually seeing pixels. So the nice thing about the Switch is people aren't reporting seeing pixels. The screen does have a high res... I'm not going to call it a high resolution screen because it isn't that high. 720p is good. It's not great. You know, I'm not going to give the Switch an award for having a slightly better resolution than the PS Vita, which is a 4-5 year old device.
It's not exactly new.
Yeah. It's not exactly new. But yes, I was wrong. The screen is beautiful, as I've heard from many, many people online who have actually held the thing in their hands. They say that the device actually has some weight, feels expensive, looks sleek, is stylish. The graphics are good, are really good on the small screen. And you know, you're not holding it like an inch from your face, so you're not going to see a ton of pixels. That said, 720p isn't a very high resolution to be aiming for on a current gen device. But yeah, apparently the screen is beautiful and I shouldn't be complaining.
All right, on to our next email. This one comes from Shu X. And he writes, I tend to agree with the Hoth about Mario Run's pricing. Scott's opinions are often the opposite of mine, but it's nice to hear differing views from time to time. Scott brought up Team Fortress 2 as an example of making money on microtransactions while giving away the game for free. I'm not sure if he was aware, but TF2 didn't go free to play until the game had already been out for 4 years. As someone who bought the game at full price initially, I noticed that while the number of active users went up following the free-to-play shift, the overall quality of the community took a nosedive and became much more toxic. Granted, this wouldn't be as much of an issue with Mario Run specifically, as there's not a lot of in-game engagement with other players, but if the negative reviews are any indication, that $10 charge seems to act as sort of a bulwark against toxicity that would otherwise be engaging with the game.
Yeah.
Who knows, maybe Mario could improve their demeanor. Nintendo's other forays into free-to-play have had mixed results. Steel Diver went free-to-play and was basically never heard from again. Rusty's Real Deal Baseball had a free-to-play model, and I'm not sure it enjoyed much success, judging by the Big N silence.
Yeah.
Badge Arcade and Miitomo, I would think, would benefit from being rolled into a single, more social experience like Miiverse, where your badges and outfits and whatnot could be shared and displayed among a wider audience. Anyway, love the podcast. Keep it up. Scott, since a lot of that was aimed at you and free-to-play and Team Fortress 2, how would you like to respond?
I love how well thought out that letter was. My gosh, that's all really good information. I did not know that Team Fortress 2 was not free-to-play for several years before it went free-to-play, which is pretty incredible. And the fact that they figured out how to monetize it in that way by selling, you know, crazy hats is just...
yep.
Mind-blowing. It's groundbreaking. The fact that the community got toxic after it went free-to-play, I can totally see that. I'm guessing a game like Rocket League, if it were free-to-play, could also have the same thing. And that barrier to entry creates a level of confidence that you're not just a bunch of evil people running wall hacks and doing all sorts of bad things, aim bots and stuff. So yes, I completely understand that. And you know, Nintendo games don't really have a huge online component. And so yes, you're right. If Mario Run did have some sort of social aspect and they made the game free to play, I mean, you can see it in the App Store reviews. Let's call that like the free to play era.
Right, that's what he's saying.
That's where you'll see a lot of the toxicity in the reviews on a game like this. So yeah, if that was brought into the game, my gosh, I would stand clear of it. So you're right. Your community will definitely be improved if there's a certain barrier to entry, whether it be some sort of skill-based entry or some sort of monetary entry, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Barriers to entry can be a good thing. I'm not sure it's totally relevant in the case of something like Super Mario Run, but I think he does make a good point that there are benefits to premium games in addition to simply being consumer-friendly.
Yep.
When it comes to online toxicity in general, obviously that's something that is really important to Nintendo. They're always trying to prevent trouble. They've been quick to react anytime I've had problems on Miiverse. And who knows, maybe the premium online service for Switch will help keep things more pleasant when it comes to games such as Splatoon 2.
And I think Nintendo engenders a bit more of a loving community, honestly. I've seen it firsthand at places like PAX, where if you go to the Nintendo area, it's just a bunch of chill, fun-loving, you know, people with their 3DSs and we're, you know, trading street passes. And I think Nintendo's already built a great community, and I hope that continues.
You make a good point. You know, comparing the letters that we got at Nintendo Power, both in the regular letters column and for the community section, it was like night and day comparing that to at any other publication I've been involved with. Just the level of positivity just seemed way higher with Nintendo products involved to begin with.
Yeah, I agree.
To cover the last thing that Shu X mentioned, though, in his letter, you know, was this thing about, you know, combining Badge Arcade and Miitomo and making it more of a social experience. I think that's a really good idea. I mean, Miitomo, of course, is a wasteland. Mm-hmm. You know, they're promising another update soon, but I don't know how that's going to save it. And I've really lost my interest in Badge Arcade as well.
Really? You haven't been playing Badge Arcade?
I haven't. After I got all the Mega Man badges and actually, you know, paid money for them, it's like, okay, well, I guess I'm done with this. I've got, and some of them have like over 1,000 badges.
Oh my gosh. But, and you, have you, how much money have you put into Badge Arcade?
I don't know. But a lot of those badges were totally free.
Okay.
But I mean, I did pay for some Mega Man ones. I did pay for some Zelda ones. Mm-hmm. But that's beside the point. The point is that, it would be cool to be able to actually show those off to people. And I think having something like that would be way more fun than the stupid Miitomo drop, which, you know, I really can't be bothered to do that.
Yeah.
It seems like such a waste.
It's random and it's, so clunky, it is super clunky. I think there needs to be some sort of skill based.
Right. There's no skill involved.
Something like a crane game, something like a pinball type game, not like a pachinko crappy Miitomo rando game. You know, Nintendo's got a lot of power here. If they made a game like a Badge Arcade and it linked with my Switch and I could decorate my Switch's home screen with badges I won in a mobile game and other people could play this mobile game and the badges could just live inside that app, or they could give you access to, I don't know, wallpapers to download for your computer or something. Who knows? But I think Nintendo could create digital products that people would really, really gravitate towards, something like icons or desktop backgrounds or iPhone backgrounds that are, you know, if I win the crane game on my iPhone, maybe it gives me a really cool background for my desktop on my iPhone. I would pay a dollar for that in a heartbeat to get like a really cool Mega Man background that I can only get if I played this game. So,
all right. Yeah. Great letter. Thanks for sending that in, Shu. And also thanks to Johnny P for sending in his letter as well.
Yeah. Great letters.
Why don't we move along from here then and discuss this week's big topic, which is, should there be a successor to the Nintendo 3DS? There's been some rumors in the last week or so that perhaps it is something that Nintendo is considering, but obviously we have the Nintendo Switch coming out, which is indeed a handheld and a console.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what do you need another handheld for when you've already got the Switch, which is console quality games, on the go? So right now I've got the 3DS.
Yeah.
It's in its sixth year. It's been fantastic. It's got a lot of great games. And of course, Nintendo has, you know, the greatest record in the business when it comes to dedicated handheld gaming machines. Could that be in jeopardy? Could they just be having the Switch as their only platform in the future? We will see. But, you know, what should they do? Scott, what is your opinion on this matter?
Well, speaking selfishly, I desperately would love another Nintendo console. I really feel like their teams, they have teams that work on for both consoles, and I feel like the games that they made for the 3DS are really outstanding. So where do those people go? Where do the intelligent systems guys who have been making mobile games go? Do they get folded into the Switch team now?
Well, I mean, what's to say if they couldn't make those games, you know, as full-blown console experiences on Switch? I mean, it's not like Fire Emblem used to be all mobile. There have been, I mean, it started out as a console game, and then on GameCube and Wii, it was also a console game. It's only recently that it's gone mobile, so there's nothing that says it still has to be that way. And as we've seen with Switch, there are multiple price points. There's room for games like Snipper Clips. They're only going to be $20 and look pretty visually simple. And then there's going to be, you know, your full $60 experiences like Zelda. And, you know, there's nothing stopping them from releasing something that's, you know, sort of intermediate that kind of, you know, looks like it was made for a handheld system.
Yeah.
They don't have to go all out and make everything be, you know, the fanciest, most cutting edge HD possible. So I don't really think that's a problem. In fact, I would say that's one of the reasons to not do a separate system, because then you can take all of these great development teams and suddenly they're all working on just a single piece of hardware. I mean, if there's been anything that's been a problem with the Wii U and with Nintendo gaming over the last several years, it's that there hasn't been enough software. If you have both a 3DS and you have a Wii U, then it's like, okay, well, I'm getting a steady stream of good games. But if you only have one or the other, it's like, okay, well, now I have to wait a couple of months for the next thing to come out. But if every single game is available on that one system, which is both a console and is a handheld,
yeah,
I mean, that's huge. That, you know, solves that big problem. Mm-hmm. And it means you're getting every game. It's not dependent on owning different hardware from Nintendo. If you own a Nintendo system, if you own the current Nintendo system, the Switch, then you're getting access to everything.
Obviously, that makes a ton of sense. But I don't think that is going to happen. I just don't see us getting twice the amount of games or twice the quality of games just because they're now folding all these people into one console development group. I think for Nintendo, the decision that would make the most money would be the one that provides for a second device, because you can double dip. You can sell me Yoshi's Woolly World on the Wii U, and then 8 months later, you can sell me the 3DS, you know, version with a few little tweaks, or the Mario Maker on two different consoles.
Well, sure, you can do that now, but with Switch, that doesn't make any sense, because You would never need to do that, because, well, if I want to have Yoshi's Woolly World mm-hmm. on the go, I can just unplug my Switch and I can take it with me. I don't need to buy a separate version to put it on presumably technically lesser system.
So the technically lesser system is not just technically lesser, it's cheaper. And that's a big deal. I think $300, the barrier to entry for this console, $300 is a lot of money
is a good point.
You know, for people to buy their 8-year-old their first video game console, I just don't see mom and dad going out and saying, okay, Junior, you're 8 years old, here's your birthday present, $300 mm-hmm. video game console that looks, you know, like a Lamborghini. They should be giving the kid, you know, they should be giving the kid the squishy, you know, Nintendo handheld that you could wrap in a Nerf case and the kid could drool, barf, and pee on it, and it'll still work, you know. I don't see that, you know, maybe the Switch is going to be pretty bulletproof, but I don't see manufacturers making Nerf-style cases for the Switch for 8-year-olds to be playing this thing. It's not a console for 8-year-olds. I think Nintendo still needs that early foot in the door with young gamers that I think the Switch will not allow.
Well, for now, it's not going to be a problem, because we've still got the 3DS, still got the 2DS, still got that whole family of systems. And even if Nintendo were to scale back its production of software, you know, those systems, you know, there's still going to be a lot of stuff that's out there. They're still going to have long lifespans. They could still be sitting out there on the shelves for, you know, another couple of years, mm-hmm. even with minimal software. So you still can get your entry-level systems for $100 or maybe even less. Mm-hmm. But that wouldn't detract from their main priority, which would be Switch. So in that regard, I kind of think Nintendo might already have things covered with entry-level hardware.
But how long could they keep that up? I mean, you can't just have this ghost ship of a system sitting out there on shelves and there's no new software being made for the thing. And I think that we're going to see the last 3DS game published in the next couple years. So I just feel like it makes a lot of sense monetarily for them to still have a lower-priced console geared towards a younger audience that also has a gimmick. And I don't think the Switch really has a gimmick at all. I mean, the gimmick is a console and a handheld.
Console is a pretty big gimmick. And plus, you know, the motion controls and having a touchscreen on there, all that stuff.
I have an iPhone and an iPad, and they also, I could take them on the go, but I could also send whatever's on the screen on my iPad to my television. So I have that kind of already, you know. It's not like but, you know, the games aren't nearly of a Nintendo quality caliber, and they're not these deep, deep experiences, but it's still a gimmick I already have access to. I think Nintendo needs to, and there's been mention of like a VR headset for the Switch, and that's something they're thinking about. They're still thinking about other gimmicks that they can socket into the Switch, but I think that their handhelds have always had these really great, you know, gimmicks, the two screens.
Well, before we get into that, I would like to address what you were saying about, you know, how you're able to take your Apple product mm-hmm. and take your, you know, usually crummy mobile games and put them on your screen. And that's sort of the opposite of what Switch is, which is you're going to take your amazing console experiences and just be able to take it on with you.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's kind of night and day. And I also think that maybe in a couple of years, by the time the 3DS has, you know, run its course as a ghost ship, as you were saying, maybe by then they'll be able to have a cheaper price point on the Switch. Maybe they'll be able to have, you know, cut the costs a lot. And maybe, even just maybe, they would consider making something that is a dedicated handheld that, you know, doesn't have the gimmick, which is the other gimmick is the interchangeable controllers.
Yes,
that's the thing that
that's
Switch
right.
also
I
has.
I did forget that other gimmick, but it's
But maybe this one won't have that gimmick. Yeah. Maybe it'll just be a lower priced handheld with the controllers already, you know, attached mm-hmm. to it. And you can't plug it into your TV, and they'll be able to sell that for like, you know, $150 or
yeah.
something.
So
down the road.
Yeah. When we started talking about this topic, the only other thing I could see them doing to create the lower cost Switch alternative would be to either make a 3DS successor, which I believe needs a gimmick like 3D, or they could do, like you said, like a lower cost Switch. Now, what would a lower cost Switch look like? How could you have the price of the Switch? How could you cut the Switch's price in half, still make it
a Switch?
Well, technology
is always getting cheaper.
That's true. I just can't see any way that Nintendo could cut the price of the Switch a few years down the road because the Switch is cheaper to make. It's just not what they do with their consoles. They create a low-cost device. They sell it at a relatively high premium. And then economies of scale and the fact that technology gets cheaper and cheaper, then they can keep building these units, sell them at the same retail price, and make a bigger and bigger profit over the life of the console.
Right, but they also have a history of simplifying the console, making it smaller and streamlined and cheaper.
But only their handhelds, not their consoles, really. So
well, right, and that's what this is. So they could make like something that is a dedicated handheld mm-hmm. that where it doesn't have removable controllers, and so you're kind of losing
yes.
that important mm-hmm. gimmick. But you can be like, oh, hey, just like we cut the 3D out of the 3DS to make the 2DS yep. and have made something that's sort of, you know, totally the opposite of what this thing was intended to be, but appeals to younger, new gamers, mm-hmm. they could do the same thing with Switch, and that could, you know, fill that role.
Yeah, that's the only thing I could see as well, like a 2DS version of the Switch. But I think that too many corners would need to be cut, and I'd hate to see that device, because I think it would need a smaller screen. There would be no dock. It would be mm-hmm. download only. It wouldn't even play cartridges.
Why would it be download that? Well, they don't need to do that. They should. No, they'd still have to do cartridges.
You think
you can't
would?
Do download only. For something aimed at kids, it would have to have
you
the cartridges.
So?
Yeah,
okay.
I think so. And we've seen Sony try that and fail miserably. I don't think the world's ready for that on Nintendo system yet.
But the iPhone and the iPad are download only, and they're making profit like gangbusters. What do you?
Yeah, I guess it's true.
Yeah,
it's true. But, you know, Nintendo, I guess, makes it a lot harder for people to accidentally blow $1,000 on a mobile game.
Yeah.
So.
But what I could see is smaller screen, lower resolution screen, possibly even. You could make a 480p screen. You're not pushing as many pixels. The engine could probably adjust the way that it does when it's playing a game on the Switch in 720p mode. And then on your 1080p mm-hmm. screen, it could switch over
right.
to 900p mode.
Mm-hmm. Switch over.
Mm-hmm. Switch over. So yeah, so 720p on the handheld, 900p on the big screen, and then if you had this cheaper Switch, it would be like a 480p. It would be more like a Wii U gamepad, and it'd probably look a lot like a Wii U gamepad. I think that would be an unfortunate bunch of corner cutting, and I don't want to see that device. In the same way that I think the 2DS is a lot of unfortunate corner cutting, and I don't like that device. I would buy it because it looks cool, like a crazy looking wedge, but it doesn't clamshell close, so there's no way to protect the screen. It's a dust magnet. It looks like a junk toy, because it kind of is.
Well, sure. I mean, I think you're totally right on all those points, and I think the thing about that system is that it's not for us, just the way that this, handheld
yeah.
only hypothetical Switch would be not for us. We're talking about something that's a cheaper entry-level system
okay.
for someone. And for that point,
right.
I think, you know, it works, it could work pretty well, potentially.
Okay. Yeah.
So have I sold you that we do not need a 3DS successor now?
No, only because we still don't have the gimmick. I mean, again, I totally get this detachable controllers and the fact that there's haptic feedback in both of them, and you can lean back and play a game with your hands at your sides, which is going to be and feel bizarre, I think. The last time we had that was with the Wii, with the nunchuck and the Wiimote. I just don't feel like we have a gimmick that's going to move systems in the way that the 3DS did. I think the mind-blowing fact that there was this glassesless 3D on this system, and I still feel like it's a big selling point for people. It's a huge selling point for me. I'm buying games for the 3DS as opposed to on the Wii because I enjoy playing them in 3D more than I enjoy playing them in 2D. I know that's bananas to a lot of people, but it really is how I play the system. And I know a lot of people are playing their 3DS with the 3D slider turned off. It also has two screens. I think that's a big deal. I really love the two screens. I love interacting on the lower screen and the upper screen being my play field. And it makes for a lot of interesting gameplay mechanics that aren't possible with a one screen device. So I just don't see that, you know, we've had two screens since literally the beginning of Nintendo's foray into video gaming with the little LCD screens games. So I don't see them giving up on that dual screen gimmick. And I really think that you're going to see another two screen handheld console from Nintendo in the next 2 or 3 years. That lower price point and hopefully 3D, hopefully a high resolution screen, you know, and we'll see. But that's my hope. I would hate to see 3D die with this system.
I mean, people weren't really that enamored with the 3DS and its capabilities right when it came out. So I'm not sure if that really is as big a selling point for as many people you might want it to be.
I'm most certainly
I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like, you know, you and perhaps I am in the minority when it comes to that.
Yeah.
With that said, you know, I've sort of been playing devil's advocate here and trying to think up reasons why there should not be a 3DS successor. Mm-hmm. But my goodness, I would love there to be a 3DS successor and have an actual follow-up dedicated handheld in addition to the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Like you were saying, Nintendo has this huge history with the dual screens and the 3D effect. It really, really is spectacular. And, you know, that's just not something that we're going to have anymore if the 3DS goes away and there is not a follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that the Switch doesn't have is any backwards compatibility. And so if there was another system that had at least two screens and hopefully the 3D, you know, then maybe you could, you know, plug in your DS and 3DS carts and still have that backwards compatibility, which is something that I think a lot of people might end up missing when it comes to the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a huge fan of dedicated handhelds. That's why I had a PSP. That's why I even bought a Vita, even though I knew that there were probably only going to be like, you know, five games I was ever really going to care about in the lifetime of the Vita. I'm like, you know, this is a market that I want to see succeed.
Yeah.
And so even if it's not, you know, the most amazing thing ever, I'm still going to get this thing because you don't get these kinds of experiences outside of what Nintendo and Sony are doing. And so I would really like to find a way to have it continue on.
Mm-hmm. I'd also like to add you will not see people buying multiple Nintendo Switch consoles for their home. They'll buy one.
Oh, that's not true. I already know of somebody who's bought two.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
So,
why?
Just so they can have like one for multiple members of the family.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Maybe you'll have two.
I've already heard of it
happening. Okay. Maybe you'll have two. Christopher Hoffman, how many Nintendo 3DSs have you purchased?
It's more than two.
How many?
I will tell you that much. Oh boy, it's probably like four.
Okay. And I have purchased five. I've purchased five 3DSs. I will not say that about the Nintendo Switch. So Nintendo needs a device where there is a world where there are people buying five of this of a console. That's crazy. If you said to somebody, how many PS Vitas do you own? Do you own five PS Vitas? If they said yes, you'd be like, okay, let's take a trip to the asylum. We need to lock you up. Yeah, but it's very common. I mean, if there's a special edition 3DS, it's got this crazy skin or this crazy color, or it's a green, it looks like Yoshi, you'll buy it because it looks cool and it's not so expensive that it's beyond the realm of comprehension that you'll, you know, it's like $150, $200. We're a bunch of big kids who have the money now to buy the toys we want. And we'll buy these toys because limited edition, it looks really cool. It sits on my shelf. It's a centerpiece. The Switch is not going to be that. You're not going to see somebody owning a green Yoshi Switch and then they'll have the Mario colored Switch and the one with the changeable faceplates. So I think Nintendo needs a handheld device because it's a big source of money. It prints money. There are memes about the DS printing money and the 3DS printing money, and the successor to the 3DS will print money. It needs to follow in the footsteps of the thing that came before it. The money printing will continue if they allow it to. Nintendo, I want to give you money. Please continue to make these 3DSs. There's probably at least one or two more 3DS purchases in my lifetime coming because I just can't get a hold of that new Mario 3DS that came out, the special edition one, and it was gone in like a minute. But yeah, Nintendo has crazy power to make people spend insane amounts of money for a slightly tweaked version of the thing they already own. But I don't think that will stop happening as long as they continue to make something like the 3DS, something like the DS, something that I can buy that's not a huge cost, that I can collect, which is scary to say you're collecting consoles. But I've seen pictures of people's walls of consoles and walls of handheld consoles. I have 10 Game Boy, OG Game Boys. I have 8 Game Boy Advances. I have something like 7 Game Boy Colors. Well, now I'm just starting to think
you're crazy.
So, I mean, that's how many Game Boy Colors and Game Boy Advances do you have, Chris? You probably have multiple. That's a thing that will continue, and Nintendo knows it makes the money, and they need to get their supply system worked out because people still want to throw money at Nintendo, and they can't.
Well, I think you make a good point. It is definitely an additional revenue stream. You know, just having one single console means all your eggs are in one basket. You know, having two consoles mean, you know, that's an additional stream. And like you said, they can make all kinds of variations. I do expect they will make different variations of the Switch, mm-hmm. Just like they did with the Wii U. I mean, I would have loved to have gotten a Zelda-themed Wii U, but I didn't because I already had the regular one. Like you said, because they cost more, I think it's less likely that people will be picking up a system that they already own.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe they'll figure out a way to do it with Switch where it's like, oh, we'll just sell, you know, a new themed dock or something like that. Or they'll just have the themed controllers. I mean, that's something they can do with the controllers is, you know, just like they did with the Wii remotes that are, you know, Mario and Luigi colors. They can be like, oh, well, here's some golden Joy-Cons for Zelda. And here are some... you know, pink ones to represent Princess Peach, or here are some with Pokemon on them. So they can still sell you all of that different variation stuff. But yeah, I mean, having two streams, having, you know, selling you, you know, Pokemon-themed Joy-Cons and then also selling you Pokemon-themed Super 3DS 2 or whatever it'd be called, you know, that's an additional stream of money and that's another way to get stuff from you. So... you know, that is a reason to continue with a dedicated handheld that's not just the Switch. For me, another really important point about why there's still a market for this is that, you know, as cool as the Switch seems to be, and I'm saying this without having, you know, tried to put one in my pocket, is that I don't think I can put one in my pocket. You know, especially with the Joy-Cons attached.
This is the complaint with the 3DS XL, which is, does it fit in your back pocket? Which is
it
a total
does,
nerdy
but it
thing
barely,
to have it happen.
It barely fits in my back
pocket. You know, it's been a long time since I've actually tried to put a handheld console in a pocket because I carry a bag with me wherever I go now because I have way more than one gadget I want to carry.
A man purse?
Yeah, man purse. It is a man purse because it carries my Rubik's Cube. It carries my iPad. It carries my laptop. It carries my 3DS. It carries my other 3DS for twice the street passes. And it carries all my chargers and cables and backup battery. So if you don't have a bag like this, you're probably not a human in 2017 because this is just the way of the world now. You don't leave the house without your bag full of stuff.
Hey, I got two pockets. I got one for my 3DS and I got one for my iPhone.
Where's your charger?
I'm doing
fine. Where are your extra game cards?
Yeah. I'll worry about that when I get home.
Sure. So, yeah, and with the Switch's battery life, I don't see you leaving home without the charging cable either. So,
oh, yeah, yeah, the battery life, that's another good point, yep, that why it's, yeah, you know, not quite as portable, nope, as it should be.
I mean,
those joysticks are sticking up and just seems a little bit less than ideal for, you know, just putting in your pocket and going down to the park.
Yeah, it's not quite. White that, but I'm going to be bringing it to class with me when I start school in a few months, a couple months. I'm going to be using it on the subway, and you know, it's going to be a constant companion, because shoot, Zelda on the go, why, who wouldn't? But I guarantee you the 3DS is going to be in the bag along with my Switch, and it's going to come out of my bag just as often as the Switch does. So here's two more options to play more Nintendo games on more Nintendo consoles. I can tell you my 3DS is not going anywhere for at least, I mean, I'm still playing my Game Boy and I'm still playing my Game Boy Advance. I'm still playing my DS. So I don't see the 3DS going anywhere.
That's true. It isn't something we have to worry about yet. Yeah, we still got a few years of life in that thing. I think there are, you know, good arguments both ways, but you know, I guess we'll just have to see how things go. Hopefully there'll be a good, healthy life for 3DS for a few more years. Mm-hmm. Hopefully Switch will take off. And then after that, you know, we'll get to a point where Nintendo can decide, you know, is it worth having another dedicated handheld out there, even if it's not as powerful as our other system, which already is portable. Mm-hmm. I would like to think there's going to be room for both, because I do love the nature of games that are on dedicated handhelds. And I would hate to see that market just up and disappear, end up in a world where we've only got the choice between, you know, full-fledged, you know, console experiences and mobile games that you know, just don't play like real video games a lot, yeah, of times. So yeah, I'm hopeful that there actually will be an opportunity for a 3DS successor. I would like to see it happen.
Me too.
And with that, I think that brings this week's big topic to a close. But before we go, there is still time for one more thing on this episode, and that is a dramatic reading. This time, it'll be coming from the manual of one of the most beloved NES games of all time. It is, of course, included in the NES classic, The Legend of Zelda. A long, long time ago, the world was in an age of chaos. In the midst of this chaos, in a little kingdom in the land of Hyrule, a legend was being handed down from generation to generation. The legend of the Triforce, golden triangles possessing mystical powers. One day, an evil army attacked this peaceful little kingdom and stole the Triforce of Power. This army was led by Ganon, the powerful Prince of Darkness who sought to plunge the world into fear and darkness under his rule. Fearing his wicked rule, Zelda, the princess of this kingdom, split up the Triforce of Wisdom into 8 fragments and hid them throughout the realm to save the last remaining Triforce from the clutches of the evil Ganon. At the same time, she commanded her most trustworthy nursemaid, Impa, to secretly escape into the land and go find a man with enough courage to destroy the evil Ganon. Upon hearing this, Ganon grew angry, imprisoned the princess, and sent out a party in search of Impa. Braving forests and mountains, Impa fled for her life from her pursuers. As she reached the very limit of her energy, she found herself surrounded by Ganon's evil henchmen. Cornered, but what could she do? But wait, all was not lost. A young lad appeared. He skillfully drove off Ganon's henchmen and saved Impa from a fate worse than death. His name was Link. During his travels, he had come across Impa and Ganon's henchmen. Impa told Link the whole story of the Princess Zelda and the evil Ganon. Burning with a sense of justice, Link resolved to save Zelda, but Ganon was a powerful opponent. He held the Triforce of Power, and so, in order to fight off Ganon, Link had to bring the scattered 8 fragments of the Triforce of Wisdom together to rebuild the mystical triangle. If he couldn't do this, there would be no chance Link could fight his way into Death Mountain where Ganon lived. Can Link really destroy Ganon and save Princess Zelda? Only your skill can answer that question. Good luck. Use the Triforce wisely.
That's pretty good. For all the garbage you've read, That's actually pretty well written. To be fair, they had like a year and a half to prepare that because the game was out in Japan well before it was out in the US. So whoever localized that and wrote it had plenty of time to write it. I'm guessing they said to one guy, like, this has got to be good. This is one of our best games ever. They must have known it was a great game because they spent a lot of time writing a great story for it. It's one of the first games that had a really, really deep story, right?
To be honest, I didn't realize it had this much depth of story going on. You know, when you plug in the game, it has that little, a track sequence that starts up, and it's not written nearly as complexly as this is. So you don't really know what's going on without reading the manual. So it is kind of cool to hear all this stuff and how Link saved Impa and all that. Usually this is where we get pretty snarky, but no reason to get snarky about The Legend of Zelda.
No, I can't. I couldn't possibly say anything bad about that. They did a great job writing that. And I think that, you know, there is really no excuse for the crap that you've subjected us to over the last 80 episodes of this show.
So don't worry. There's more where that came from.
Great. Let's get back to the stuff we can ridicule and mock.
Anyway, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter, at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Scott at Plastic Bugs. You can also email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you feel like giving us a rating on iTunes, that would be excellent. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Scott Michella,
long live the 3DS,
and the Thunder God Raiden, we will see you next time.